Carlos Santana hits it high and deep right center field. Kiermaier is back, leaping, it is gone, and Carlos Santana has driven in three tonight, and the Royals will not go away.
Royals didn't go away, but they do lose. 14-7 was the final last night against the Rays, so the Royals have lost their first series of the season, because even if they beat the Rays today, they still lose the series 2-1. It was a tough night for Brad Keller. More on the Royals coming up here in just a moment. But first, we throw it to Dusty for sports information locally.
Yes, not a whole lot. Actually, no activities yesterday in the areas. They were all either canceled or postponed due to the snow that had moved in through Monday and Tuesday. Area spring sports teams will be back in action on Thursday. You can find a complete schedule at nckssports.com for all the area high school teams. Also there at nckssports.com, you can find our athletes of the week for this week. Tipton senior Jalen Weese and Osborne sophomore Chris Heiss have been named the nckssports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athletes of the Week. Both athletes are competing this spring for the NCK Raptors in the Kansas Interscholastic Cycling League. Had good showings in the league's inaugural mountain bike race April 11th in Augusta. Weese took first place in the JV girls race, completing three laps for 9 miles by finishing in first place in her division. Weese will get to wear a special leader jersey at the next race, which is slated to take place this Sunday, April 25th at Pollen Farms east of Tipton. Along with her success on the bike trails, Weese also had a solid start in track and field for Tipton Catholic High School. At the St. John's Invitational April 6th, she claimed 2 gold medals, winning the 800-meter run in the time of 2:42.15, and also running the final leg of the 4x800-meter relay team that finished in first place there. And at Smith Center Redmond Relays April 13th, Weese helped Tipton to a second-place finish in the 4x800, and she took fourth place in the 800 free run there for Tipton. Also, Chris Heiss also excelled in the mountain bike race in Augusta on April 11th. The Osborne High product finished first in the sophomore boys race, finishing 2 laps. And Heiss will also get to wear that points leader jersey Sunday in Tipton in the second race of the season. He's also competing this spring for the Osborne track and field squad and is coming off of a wrestling season where he finished 28-14 in a tough 170-pound weight class in 3-2-1A. So both Jalen Weese and Chris Heiss excelling there here during the spring. And congratulations to them as the NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athletes of the Week. And you can read much more about them on the website, and you can learn more about how to nominate an athlete of the week at NCKSSports.com. So I'll get you up to date on local sports here today.
All right, sounds good. Weather's not looking very good for tomorrow. I've noticed chance for some rain. Going to be chilly and about 51 tomorrow with winds. So, yay for all of that, for those that try to sit out and enjoy outdoor sports. If, in fact, there are baseball games like the other day, it was very cold for JV baseball. So but it looks like it'll warm up here later on this weekend. As we mentioned, the Royals lose to the Rays last night, and you know, you really just have to simply start with Brad Keller. When you're down big early, which the Royals were, and Keller couldn't get out of the second inning, goes inning in two thirds, he walked three hits, 5 earned runs, and Keller's ERA is now 12.00. Royals down 5-0. Came back 4 in the bottom of the third, made it 5-4. The Rays would score 1 in the 4th, 1 in the 5th. They go up 7-4. Royals battle back with the 1 in the 5th, as you heard with Santana homer, 7-5. But then 4 more for the Rays in the 6th, then 3 insurance runs in the 9th on back-to-back homers off of reliever Greg Holland, who wasn't scheduled to come out of the bullpen, but the Royals didn't have anybody left available to try to get through this game. And that's the problem with a starter not going very deep into a game, as you put a lot of pressure and burden and stress on your bullpen. In fact, it was so bad that Hanser Alberto, the Royals' utility player, had to come in and get an out there at the end of the ball game last night. So the Royals, they lose 14-7. They are now 9-7 on the season. The Rays improved to 10-8. Keller takes the loss. He's now 1-2. And here's Mike Matheny on Keller's rough night on the bump.
I just wore out, just had some things not go his way. And then next thing you know, we're at too many pitches and we just have to get him out. That last walk was a result of being pretty tired, but we pushed him to the brink. The most we feel comfortable going with in an inning. But you know, I thought his stuff looked pretty good again. Not a lot of hard hits. Sac fly was pretty hard hit, but besides that. So just a tough one.
Tough night at the office for the Royals, who are now 9-7. The Royals still have the lead in the American League Central. Everybody else is 500 or worse, as the Royals now have lost two in a row, and the Rays moved to within two games of first place behind the Red Sox in the American League East. And other notes here, I'll get to in just a second, but the Royals will be in action again tonight at 7:10, the final game of three against the Rays. It's Jacob Junis on the hill for the boys in blue. Then the Royals will start a series on Friday against the Tigers, who are off to a rough start at 6-10. I think Kansas City sports fans, if you're a Royals and Chiefs fan, you're tired of Tampa Bay teams.
Yeah.
Just get rid of the Tampa Bay teams. You know, exile them from the league if you need to, whatever you got to do. Because the Rays have won two in a row over the Royals, and, of course, the Chiefs lost to Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady in the Super Bowl 55. A couple of other baseball notes. Corbin Burnes, we told you about him. Milwaukee Brewers a few days ago. He now has thrown 40 strikeouts. He struck out 40 guys, no walks. That's a record never been done in Major League Baseball history to start a season. Also, the hardest hit home run of Mike Trout's career was last night. The A's swept a doubleheader. They have extended their win streak to 10. And Ohtani returned with 7 Ks, strikeouts, and 4 scoreless innings there for the Angels. Of course, a lot of people say, well, he's got to focus on one thing or another. He can't do pitching and hitting. I think it's cool if he tries to do both. Why not? Guys do it all the time in college, and they do it in high school. Pros, I know, obviously, it'd be a little bit harder. But he's still trying to make it work both as a hitter and as a pitcher. And how about this? Matt Harvey, who was with the Royals shortly for a short time last year, Matt Harvey got his first win as a pitcher with the Baltimore Orioles. And I'm trying to see here. It's his first win since July 13th of 2019. Because since then, he was 0-5 with ERA, 8.16 in 11 games, 8 starts for 3 different teams, including the Royals. But he got a win last night for the Baltimore Orioles. So there is a flash from the past right there with Matt Harvey, who's still on a Major League Baseball team. One of the best pitchers in baseball for a short period of time.
Yeah, it was short-lived for sure.
It was a short-lived time at the top.
Yeah, but he was very dominant at one time.
No doubt. Let's see here. There we go. Patrick Mahomes says he has a flaw in his game. That's good to know.
Yeah.
That he has a flaw. Not as a Chiefs fan, you don't want to know about any flaws. He's Superman. But it's good to know that he acknowledges there's a flaw. And the story that's on CBS Sports about Mahomes is that he says, and I quote, "I think you have to take it back to the first year that I started. We lost the Patriots in the AFC title game. I mean, you have to let that stuff motivate you to get better each and every day. You look back at that, and we were able to find a way to kind of flip a switch and make ourselves better and make a run at the Super Bowl the next year and try to have that same mentality of knowing that we've been there 2 years in a row now. We've won one. We've lost one. We have to find a way to get back and try to win it." Mahomes typically tries to create a big play in order to get the Kansas City's offense going. He was guilty of that in Super Bowl 55, completing just 53% of his passes. His passer rating of 52.3 was the worst of his career in Super Bowl 55. But Mahomes says instead of hitting home runs and making things happen, Mahomes vows to take the single and move on to the next at bat. I think that's boring, but okay. He says there are times in the game when we were down, I tried to scramble to make a play happen. They were playing a lot of deep coverages. I probably could have handed it off on some RPO type options that we had. At the end of the day, we just got to execute a higher level as an offense. And I know the guys are motivated to come back and do whatever we can this offseason, whenever that is, and to make ourselves the best team we possibly can. So that is what Mahomes plans on doing, and who's to argue with what he can do after he was very motivated after losing, not getting the ball in overtime against the Patriots in 2018, AFC title game, came back, win a Super Bowl, come back, make the Super Bowl, missing his left and right tackle, and guys dropping passes that he put right off their helmets. But at the same time, I think there's some merit to that. Matthew Derrick talked about it with us after the Super Bowl of Chiefs Digest that, you know, Mahomes did keep the ball maybe a little too long at times, even though he's running for his life half the time, but also to take the open receivers that were open underneath. And he says the film will show that there are some receivers that are open underneath that Mahomes kept trying to make that big play because once they fell behind. And I think that's typical of a gunslinger. You want to make this big play and get your team right back in it and create that emotion and excitement. And Mahomes, more often than not, is able to do that at the pro level. But he was not able to do it in Super Bowl 55 in Tampa against the Buccaneers. So he plans to fix that flaw in his game. And let me tell you something. If Mahomes can mix in the short passing game with the deep passing game and become more patient but then take his shots, it's going to make him a more dangerous quarterback without question.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, you can't be one-dimensional no matter what it is, right? Like, you've got to hone and craft everything that it takes to be a successful NFL quarterback. And, yeah, I mean, obviously that makes him way more dangerous.
And that's okay with me. I'm a Chiefs fan. I'm all about making Patrick Mahomes more dangerous. Perhaps they'll get a nice, shiny toy for the offense, maybe a wide receiver coming up in the draft that begins next Thursday, a week from tomorrow, next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I'll talk more about the draft next week. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. All right, some updates on K-State athletics. Women's golf, K-State tied for sixth at the Big 12 Championship. Former K-State women's Wildcat basketball player Peyton Williams added to the Seattle Storm training camp roster, so that's good news. Hopefully she can make the team. That'd be awesome. Chrissy Carr, if you didn't know by now, is entering the transfer portal to leave Kansas State. She was one of their best players last year. K-State men's golf team brings home the Husker Invite team title, so that's pretty exciting. And if you didn't know about the K-State baseball team, they've had some excitement here recently as they were taking on Oklahoma, and they had a walk-off. I believe that was game one that they had the walk-off against Oklahoma, if I remember right, 3-2. Day Cats open Big 12 play against number 13 Oklahoma State, number 3 Texas Tech, and then number 3 Texas. Cats finally face an unranked opponent in their 10th game of the conference slate. The schedule is going to get easier, but if K-State had lost both games on Saturday against Oklahoma, they would have dropped to 2-9 in conference play, but they did get the wins over Oklahoma, and they had that walk-off in extra innings on Saturday in the first game, and then won game two, so they did sweep that doubleheader against the Sooners. And also, we've talked about the transfer to K-State men's basketball, three notable ones, the kid from Arkansas, Little Rock, 5'7 guard, Mark Smith from Oklahoma, and Ismail Mahmoud of Wake Forest, who was a stretch four. So K-State feels pretty good about that. And Chris Kleiman and K-State talking about how they're going to leave 10 of the 25 scholarships each year open for transfers, transfer portal, which I think more teams will do that, or they're already doing it. They just don't make it completely obvious like K-State did, which I thought was interesting why they did that. But
Apparently there was some uproar from some fans about that, and it's like, why do you care?
Why does it matter?
I don't know if it's because you want high school kids to have those opportunities more than transfers that have already been in there. Like, I was like, I don't know why people are upset about that. Like, for me, it's
if you're a football fan, all you should care about is winning.
I want experienced guys if I can get them to come to my program.
Right.
Not that hard for me to figure. I know it does take away opportunities from high school kids. I'm seeing that right now.
Sure.
Right? And you're seeing that in football and basketball and every level right now because of all the different things that have gone on here. But I think most coaches and programs are probably going to take that approach to where, hey, if we're going to have this many kids in the transfer portal and that many opportunities to find experienced players, we're going to go ahead and take that, and we're going to take it and run with it and maybe get our team, if we feel like we're a little bit behind the eight ball here, we can get, speed up the process of improvement just that much quicker. And especially if you're going to lose 5 to 10 guys every year to the transfer portal.
Yeah, you don't want to lose guys that are sophomores or juniors for a whole bunch of, freshmen.
Yeah, you need to fill that in with guys that have experience if you've lost experience. That's what Bruce Weber's doing right now with the men's basketball team, I feel like.
He's become more experienced team.
These guys are even more experienced. So, I think it's a smart thing to do. I don't think it matters if you come out and say it like he said it or not. It's just do it how you need to do it to make your team better, and that's what the goal is no matter what you're doing. And if you feel like freshmen and seniors in high school are going to be a better option than some of those veteran guys, then go get some of those guys too. But you got to find out what kind of group's going to make your team have success in a very tough conference.
Yeah, there's no doubt the transfer portal makes it tougher for kids to, because, KU's focused on getting high school seniors and some of the best ones in the country, and now you're going to see a shift towards getting more of the transfer guys.
Yeah.
Like the Sun Belt Player of the Year, Devontae Davis of Coastal Carolina, declared that he's transferring. All of a sudden, 15 schools, including Kansas, have shown interest. You're going to go get a more established person if you can instead of a high school senior. So there's no doubt the transfer portal doesn't help high school seniors. I think that's very clear.
Yeah.
Especially for the top programs, because they're going to do whatever they can do to reload instead of rebuild, no doubt. So that's a good K-State in Focus, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit as well. The proposed European Super League, well, that lasted a long time. It's done for now. The league announced late on Tuesday that it was suspending its current plans as clubs involved begin to back out. All six Premier League clubs who initially joined the league on Sunday night had announced plans to drop out of the competition by Tuesday. So less than 48 hours, they waffled and wimped out. Chelsea and Manchester City did so early in the day. Liverpool, Arsenal, Manchester United, and Tottenham followed suit later in the night. By Wednesday, today, Italian clubs also began abandoning the project, with sources at Milan confirming to CBS Sports that they are drafting a statement that will immediately confirm that they are also leaving the Super League. Thus, the chairman, one of the main architects of the Super League, Andrea Agnelli, conceded the project would not go ahead. The European Super League is convinced that the current status quo of European football needs to change. We are proposing a new European competition because this system does not work. Our proposal is aimed at allowing the sport to evolve while generating resources, stability for the full football pyramid, including helping to overcome the financial difficulties experienced by the entire football community as a result of the pandemic. Anyway, given the current circumstances, we shall reconsider the most appropriate steps to reshape the project, always having in mind our goals of offering fans the best experience possible while enhancing solidarity payments for the entire football community. So the Super League lasted less than 48 hours. I have to say, either they didn't really understand the pushback they were going to get, which I find that extremely irresponsible. Like, they had to have known that was going to ruffle feathers. And then and I'm not talking about the person that put it together. I'm talking about the teams that agreed to join. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it's like, well, one pulls out, and now all of a sudden, it's just a domino effect. There doesn't seem to be a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for, gumption. Obviously, there's not solidarity within those 12 school or clubs. And that ended quicker than the XFL, man.
I don't know.
That ended quicker than a Kardashian wedding. Yeah. I mean, marriage.
It's all weird.
Weddings last a long time.
Because it's like, I think maybe they felt like if they stayed in the UEFA and did their thing too,
yeah,
but then broke off and did their own bigger championship later.
Right. But once UEFA said,
said no. But I think once FIFA came in and said they weren't, this is not good, this is not cool.
Yeah.
I think once the international thing came in to where it was like, we might lose out on more than we gain here.
Yeah.
And I think that they probably felt like they were okay because they were going to give money to the non-participating teams, right? Mm-hmm. Like they were going to funnel in some cash and some money to those teams so they could just build the structure a little bit. But it would have been wild for those teams to do that, to see that kind of league over there. Because those names are names that even if you don't pay attention to soccer –
you've heard of them
all the time. You've heard those names, mm-hmm. like Real Madrid, Manchester United. You've heard those names,
mm-hmm.
and so that would have been crazy if they would have been able to do it. But yeah, that fell apart very, very fast.
Very fast. NBA last night, the Hawks are 32-26. They're a young team, very talented. Trae Young, 25 points. They beat the Magic 112-96. Look out for the New York Knickerbockers. The Knicks have won six in a row. Julius Randle's having a great year. He had a double-double last night. They beat the Hornets 109-97. The Nets squeaked by the Pelicans 134-129. Kyrie Irving with 32 points. No KD, no Harden. Zion Williamson, who's had a really good year, 33 points and 7 rebounds. The Clippers are red hot. They're now 41-19. They squeaked by the Trailblazers 113-112. Kawhi Leonard out for a week with a sore foot. Paul George picks up the slack with 33 points and 11 rebounds. CJ McCollum with 28 to lead Portland. And in a game that people probably don't care too much about, but I'll share it anyway, Timberwolves beat the Kings 134-120. Karl Anthony Towns with 26 points and 18 rebounds. He is the best player on a bad team year in and year out. He's just a really good talent that puts up the numbers, but he's just on a bad team, and they're never on a team that's very, very good. Seems like Minnesota is always rebuilding instead of reloading. There was a few years ago.
Since Kevin Garnett left, it's just been like they can't figure.
I like where they were going a few years ago. They had Wiggins, they had Towns, they had Jimmy Butler, and I was thinking, okay, they could put something together there. Tom Thibodeau was their coach, and it just
young team that looked like they were coming up, and
just
gone.
Just absolutely imploded is what took place there. So those are the games from last night. Here today on a Wednesday, the schedule: Bulls, Cavaliers, Thunder, Pacers, 76ers, and Suns, the marquee game. That's a good game. Nets, Raptors, Wizards, Warriors. Oh, Steph Curry against Bradley Beal. Top two scorers in the league playing against each other. And Russell Westbrook, who's averaging 11 rebounds, 11 assists, and 22 points a game, Mr. Triple-Double. That's for two teams, one's 500, the Warriors, and the other's nine games under 500. There's some marquee names there, Westbrook, Beal, and Curry. The Knicks play the Hawks tonight. That's a really interesting game. Fighting position in the Eastern Conference and seeding. Jazz and the Rockets, the Pistons and the Mavericks, Spurs and Heat, and the Grizzlies and the Clippers, along with the Nuggets, Trailblazers. That's a nice game later tonight. And, oh, yeah, and the T-Wolves and Kings will play again after they just played last night. That should be exciting. All right. On this date in NBA history, this is pretty cool stuff. This is top moments that NBA TV's got. And on April 21st of 1996, do you know what happened?
Well, I'm going to guess the Bulls hit 70.
They had their 72nd win, 72. Actually,
this
on April 21st. Game.
It was the last win. Okay.
Their 72nd win on April 21st. That was the Bulls team that went 72-10. They eclipsed the record by the 71-72 Lakers, who went 69-13. Of course, the Warriors went 73-9 and 15-16, but didn't win the championship. The Bulls, back in 96, they finished 39-2 at the United Center at home, 33-8 on the road. Their 33 road victories, the most ever. They steamrolled the competition, the playoffs. They lost only one game in series wins over Miami, New York, and Orlando. Then they were up 3-0 in Seattle and then lost two in a row and then finished it off in Chicago. And the Bulls, of course, won the championship. So not only did they win 70 games, and actually 72, but they went on to, of course, win it all, unlike what the Warriors couldn't do. Although if there wasn't no LeBron James or Draymond Green hadn't been suspended, maybe the Warriors would have had that. So I think you can fairly say the greatest team of all time in professional basketball history is the Chicago Bulls from 1995 and 96. Michael Jordan, who had returned to the game towards the end of the season the year prior to that, he led NBA in scoring, 30.4 a game. He was MVP for the fourth time. Pretty impressive stuff. And so I thought for us older folks, and I'm calling myself older and Dusty a little bit as well, I thought you might want to go back to when this was huge, because no NBA team had ever won 70 games. Like, the Bulls finished with 72. And I know the anniversary of the Bulls getting their 72nd win is today, but I'm focusing on the win that set the record. Enjoy flashing back to the past when the Bulls won their 70th game and went into the history books.
There it is. 70 has become a reality for the Chicago Bulls. 70 wins on the season for the Chicago Bulls.
Well, I think it's a successful comeback for myself and for the organization. I mean, you know, last year we went through some disappointments at the end of the season, and, you know, we vowed to come back and get ourselves back on top, and, you know, this is just one step. I must admit, we didn't start the season say, hey, we're going to win 70 games. We start the season say we're going to win a championship. We're halfway there right now.
Are you glad it's over now that the 70 is attained?
Yeah, I'm glad. And now we can, you know, focus on the playoffs, which is the most important thing right now.
I mean, I feel very fortunate just, you know, not only to have these 70 wins, but, you know, to still be a part of this organization and this team. And, you know, I knew last season that, you know, we did all we could to try to continue that winning tradition for the Bulls. But, you know, this season we've stepped far beyond our plateau and our goals.
The fact that these guys all have a great amount of respect for each other, for the job that they've done each and every night.
We were very reserved a little bit. We know this is not the ultimate goal. We didn't want to get overboard in terms of our success and how we share that or experience it. But I think, you know, if we win a championship, you'll see a much more enthusiastic party, believe us.
They had a fun party. They did win it all. And that's the interesting thing. You know, a lot of teams that get that record, they would have been partying, enjoying it. And the Bulls were like, yeah, this is fun. They celebrate a little bit on the court, but then it was back to business. And you heard Michael Jordan. You heard Scottie Pippen in there. Pippen, if you've watched The Last Dance, he was wanting out a few years prior to that and ended up sticking around. And it worked out for the Bulls, of course, to win a couple more championships after that. And their second three-peat, six titles in 8 years. And you always wonder, if Jordan hadn't retired, would it have been eight, or would he have retired after six and they wouldn't have got the seven or eight anyway? Who knows? Steve Kerr was a big part of that team as well. And so it's interesting when you go back, you know, Luke Longley, Dennis Rodman started on that team along with Pippen and Jordan. And then I was looking at, you know, some of the starters for the Washington Bullets at the time. That's the team they beat for the 72nd win. The 70th win you just heard was against the Milwaukee Bucks, who had Sherman Douglas, among others. who is a great, great point guard out of Syracuse, if you remember him, another flash from the past, for the Washington Bullets is what they were called at the time. And Brent Price was on that team.
Yeah.
So it's just Calvert Chaney. I mean, it's just interesting. Javon
Was Harvey still playing for that team?
I don't have that. I probably so.
Yeah.
Javon Howard had 28 points in that game on 28 shots. And Javon Howard is now the head coach of Michigan for college men's basketball. So it is interesting to see that information and look at it. And the Bulls had winning streaks of 13 and 18 games. They had 13 and 18 game winning streaks. And the Bulls starters that year, it was Tony Kukoc, Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan, Luke Longley, Dennis Rodman. They're the ones that started in that 72nd win. And the starters for the Bullets were Javon Howard, Jim McElvain, Calvert Chaney, Liddell Echols, and Brent Price. And Javon Howard had 27 points on 28 shots. And Jordan had a ho-hum game with 22 points and 9 rebounds. So that was the win back in 1996. The 72nd win, what you heard was them reacting when they won their 70th game, which set the new record in the NBA that had previously been set by the Lakers, who had won 69 games. The Bulls didn't lose back-to-back games until February. That's insane.
Yeah.
And they were just, followed by fans. They were stalked by fans, crowds waiting outside the hotels at all hours. So they had to deal with that all year long. And the Bulls just the average differential in all the games in the NBA. We're talking NBA. They beat their opponents by an average of 12.5 points, which you might say 12.5 doesn't seem like a lot. Well, it is in the NBA.
Over 82 games.
That's huge, absolutely huge. So it's I remember that run for the Bulls. They started 5-0. They were 10-1. They're 10-2, and then all of a sudden they got hot. And they won 13 in a row. They're 23-2. And that's when people started sitting there going, they might be able to do something here. And then, of course, they lost their second game in game 25. Excuse me. They lost their third game, game 26. And then that's when they had their 18-game winning streak. And then the Nuggets.
Yeah, I was going to say they were like 30-something and 3, weren't they?
Yeah, they were 41-3.
41-3, okay.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
How
at one point they were something 30-3.
Yeah.
Because they were 23-2, and they were 23-3, and then won 18 in a row, they're 41-3.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Nuggets beat them, and then the Suns beat them the very next game. So they had back to back losses after winning 18 in a row, and then they barely beat the Warriors, almost had a 3-game losing streak, and the Warriors weren't that good then. And they had some tough games. They won by 3, won by 3, won by 5. And then they started to have a few more blowouts towards the back part of the season. But I'm going back, and this is just fun, at least for me. Like, the teams that beat the Bulls in 1996, because they only lost 9 games, the Magic beat them. Who was the second? The Sonics beat them for the second loss.
Mm-hmm.
The Pacers was the third loss. The fourth loss was the Nuggets. The fifth loss was the Suns. The sixth loss was the Miami Heat when they only had 8 or 7 players available that night, believe it or not. The Heat. That was weird. And let's see here. The Knicks beat them once by 32. In game 61, the Knicks beat the Bulls by 32. So see, when you're always sitting here and talking about, well, how can a team lose by this, and you get all riled up about a margin of a loss, just keep in mind that the greatest team that ever played professional basketball, the Chicago Bulls, who went 72-10, lost a game by 32 points.
Yeah.
So it just tells you everybody can have a bad night.
Like I said, 82-game season.
You're going to have a bad
night.
There's
going to be a bad night.
Right, exactly. The Raptors beat them by 1 point, and the Hornets beat them by 1 point. So they lost 2 games by 1 point there towards the end, if they won those two. And Jim Clemens, who was an assistant coach for the Bulls, I saw this today. He said, I don't know how long ago it was, he said, had the Bulls known that the Warriors would have gotten a 73 or anybody would have come close to their record, they would have won 76 to put it out of reach.
Yeah.
Because they, at the very end, they kind of, they got to their 70 and then they won a couple more. But I remember going, can they avoid 10 losses? And then they kind of like, whatever, who cares? We got the record. Mm-hmm. They got their 10th loss at the very end of the year. Because they were all worried about, of course, winning it all, and it worked out pretty well. And that was the challenge, wasn't it, for the Warriors back in 15-16? Was, do we go for the record, or do we focus only on a championship and forget the record? And they focused on doing it all, and they came up hair short. And so then that opened yourself up to criticism and second-guessing. Although I'll say the greatest player in the world at the time is what stopped him from winning it, LeBron James, and of course, you know, Kyrie Irving too. But you know, I remember Peyton Manning and the Colts, and they were 14-0 that 1 year, and they were striving for perfection. They said that wasn't our goal. That wasn't our goal. So then they rested.
Pat McAfee talks about all the time. He's like, we chose to lose.
That's right.
He's like, we just
– yep.
It wasn't a priority.
Yeah, they rested everybody the final game, and they end up not winning all the games, and then they went to the playoffs, and they flamed out early anyway.
Yeah.
So then you go back and go, why didn't we just go for it?
Mm-hmm.
Keep the momentum going. Maybe we should have. We would have won it all. And the Warriors are going, maybe we should have done what the Bulls did and lose one at the end of the year and not worry about the record. Maybe be happy with tying the record. But that wasn't the case. And I remember reading all the stories about there was questions on, do you play your guys too many minutes because you clearly won the division, your number one seed in the playoffs. Do you go for history or do you go for winning a championship? Because you're going to be remembered better for winning a championship than having the greatest record of all time. The Bulls wouldn't be considered nearly as highly as they are if they hadn't won at all, just like the Warriors aren't because they didn't win at all.
Yeah.
And so it is interesting because, you know, I think you're darned if you do and darned if you don't. I was glad the Warriors went for it personally. I'm glad they went for it. I love to see teams that go for it, you know, and try to go undefeated and so forth. But at the same time, I know the bigger goal is to win a championship. So if you're, you know, the Chiefs last year, they weren't undefeated going in that final game of the year. And yeah, it'd been nice to say you're 15-1. Chiefs have never been 15-1, but who cares? You're 14-2. You take the loss. You play your backups because there's a bigger goal at hand. But what if the Chiefs were 15-0? Chiefs fans would have wanted them to win a 16th and go perfect, right? Mm-hmm. Make history. The Patriots did, but then they couldn't quite get it done in the Super Bowl against the Giants. And so many teams have come close to that, in essence, perfect season. They're really the only team that really, truly has in pro sports when you think about it. Well, the Dolphins, of course, in 72, and they went 17-0, and that was a long time ago, 40-some years ago, almost 50 years ago. But the Bulls, they 72-10, and then they went on to win it all. They did the whole thing. The Warriors couldn't do that. We've seen teams in college basketball like Gonzaga, Kentucky, UNLV. They can't do that. Obviously, baseball, nobody's going to go undefeated. So the Bulls were the team that was able to get everything. They got the record. They got 72 wins, and then they won the championship in – Why were they able to get everything? Perhaps because they had the greatest player of all time. Perhaps on their team.
They had mentalities on that team that a lot of teams don't have, right?
Yeah.
Like they, if you watch The Last Dance, you understand what we're talking about here. But you know, they had all the right guys in the right spots, and they had, you know, a flamboyant guy that did not care about scoring. All he wanted was to help the team win. He wanted to rebound. And obviously he was a character in Dennis Rodman.
Right.
But he was a guy that was there to do his job. And whether he was partying in Vegas the night before coming back to Salt Lake
Jordan
City.
Jordan had to pull him out of the hotel.
He was there. Like, he was ready to go. He played. He gave it max effort all game, did what his job was, right? And that's what everybody on that team did. They did their job, and you know, sometimes they didn't get along, but when the ball was tipped, you were not ready for them as an opponent most of the time. You could act like you were. You could think, hey, we're gonna be the team that knocks them off. But that team that year, I just remember always talking about that. It was like, it wasn't, we weren't as impressed by the fact that they won 72 as the fact we were shocked they lost 10.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's how good that team was. And so it's just, you know, they caught everything at the right time, did everything to finish it off. And I think that there was obviously an intimidation factor for the teams that played them as well that year. So everything came in at the right spot for them.
No, it did. And, you know, Jordan gets so much credit because many people think he's the greatest of all time. And, you know, Pippen gets some credit, although maybe not enough credit that he deserves. But two guys that don't maybe get enough credit, and I think Phil Jackson does get quite a bit of credit, but I think he should maybe get even more credit for what he accomplished. And I know he had a lot of talent, but you got to also have a coach that can put it all together, is working with those personalities like Dennis Rodman, like Pippen, who wasn't happy with Jerry Krause at the time. And the other guy that should get a lot of credit is Jerry Krause.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jerry Krause was vilified the dance with the Bulls, the documentary that came out during, you know, COVID, and that was something for us to watch on ESPN about a year ago. And Jerry Krause is the one that, you know, he signed Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman was a cancer. A lot of teams didn't even want to touch him.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought him in, and they talked to the players, and And Phil was okay
with it. Got him for Will Perdue.
He got him for basically nothing. And so Jerry Krause should get a lot of credit, despite the fact that he alienated some of his players, including Scottie Pippen. And, of course, Michael Jordan made fun of him, and they showed clips of that, which was all approved by Michael Jordan, by the way. And some people thought it may have been a little bit unfair, what was done there to Jerry Krause at one point. But he's the one that put that roster together.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't get nearly enough credit. And then he got even less credit after that documentary came out, and he's not alive to defend himself. Now, I'm not saying Jerry Krause was the greatest guy in the world. I thought some of the stuff they said about him, you know, seemed like he had obviously a small guy with a big ego, which it seems like sometimes the people that have the biggest egos are the small people. I don't mean small people in any disrespect. It's just sometimes, I don't know if you just have to have a chip on your shoulder, so that's why you have to have that. Maybe you have to have a bigger ego to survive in the business world as a smaller person, per se. Maybe there's something to that. I don't know. But what I do know is it wasn't just Michael Jordan. It's not just Michael Jordan that won that championship and won 72 games. Steve Kerr was a great addition, fit in perfectly. Luke Longley didn't have to score. You had Pippen, you had Jordan to score a majority of your points. You had spot-up three-point shooters. And Kukoc, of course, was a nice addition. There's a guy that nobody wanted. The Bulls were unhappy having Kukoc initially, Jordan and Pippen. And then he ended up being a key part of their run for the second set of three.
Yeah, I think as you look at, like, the history of European basketball players in the NBA, Tony Kukoc does not even get close to enough credit.
I would agree
for what he did in the league, because he wasn't that guy, like, that was just like Nowitzki, right? That was just like leading the league and or leading the team in scoring and among the league leaders in scoring, and everybody knew his name, right?
Right.
But Tony Kukoc played on the greatest team to ever play, and he had two guys that were more popular in front of him, so mm-hmm. he doesn't get that in three, actually, with Dennis Rodman, and so you don't get the credit there, and so yeah, you know, I really feel like Tony was a guy that has never gotten the credit he deserves as a guy that came over from Europe and had success in the NBA. Maybe that's as a Spurs fan because I see so many of them, right? But I really feel like, and I don't think Jordan and Pippen helped him either.
No, not
because they didn't like him. They didn't want him there. Obviously, butted heads, and so that was one of those deals where they were trying to bring him down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's part of the reason the greatest player in the world doesn't like you. Then you can't be that great, right?
Right. Right.
I think that's part of the reason.
No, I think you're right about that. The Bulls, by the way, the last few games of the year, they got their 70th win against the Bucks. That was 70. Then they beat the Pistons 2 days later by 31, and that was their 71st win. Then they lost to the Pacers by one, and then they beat the Bullets, as I mentioned, for their 72nd win. So they had 3 1-point losses out of their 10 losses. So yeah, it easily could have been 75-6 or whatever, 75-7. I mean, that is pretty crazy when you look at their losses. They got blown out by the Knicks, but they lost to the Hornets by one. They lost to the Pacers by one. And I know there was another one they lost by one. It is pretty amazing when you look back. And now the Raptors, they lost by one. I mean, you know, of course, when you're that great of a team, you're going to lose. You're probably going to lose in a close game. It makes sense. And they did get blown out by the Knicks by 32. But the Heat beat them by 9. That was significant, I guess. But it is fun to go back and look. And, of course, the Bulls won a lot of close games, too. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they found ways to win some of those close games, and that's why you win 72. You're not going to win all your close games. But you go back and think about that. 3 of their 10 losses were by 1 point, including the second-to-last game of the season. Had they won that, the Warriors may have only been able to tie the record.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe it wouldn't have been as much pressure to win it all since they had tied the record. Maybe there was. I don't know. But once you had the record outright that the Warriors did, it was like you have to win it all to validate it, and they couldn't. They were up 3-1, and when everybody thought that the Warriors had it wrapped up, I tried to tell people. I remember we talked about on the show. You don't let the Cavs win Game 5, and if you let them win Game 6, I don't care if it's in Golden State or not. The greatest player in the world at the time, which was LeBron. Curry was great too, but LeBron was the best player in the world. You just don't take a chance on a winner take all of Game 7 with the greatest player on the other team. And guess what happened? LeBron with an unbelievable block shot late in the game. He played well the rest of the way in that series. And, yes, Draymond Green being suspended was a big blow in that series. But the Warriors had 3 chances. once without Green and two with Green, and had two of those three games at home to finish it out and didn't get it done. So they have nobody to blame but themselves.
Oh, no.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, whether you want to blame it because they went for the record in 73 wins, that's a topic of discussion that's basically all opinion anyway. I don't think it matters.
I don't think it has anything to
do with it. I don't think so either. I agree with you on that. Man, that was 25 years ago.
I think that had something to do with it. Let me amend that. It did have something to do with it based on having more pressure going in.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
To that final series.
Right.
But as far as the way they performed and as far as why they won or lost or whatever, I don't think that was.
But the pressure really didn't get to them, obviously, when they're up 3-1.
Yeah,
on the Cavs.
Exactly.
It's
yeah.
just, I think the whole, I still think the Draymond Green suspension threw them off kilter.
100%.
And I think it's kind of like, and I don't want to make excuses for teams, but, you know, I think when you have a distraction like that was, it's, I know you're up 3-1. You might feel a little bit too relaxed because you're like, all we got to do is get one of the next three. And I think that's what happened to the Warriors.
Yeah,
they're like,
yeah.
Well, okay, we lose game 5, big deal. We got two more at home. We're good to go or whatever it was. Like, well, yeah, that had to have been. Because I remember, right, game 5 was in Cleveland. So it was a 2-3-2 format. That you know, when I sit there and think about the Chiefs losing Super Bowl 55, I still think the Brett Reed incident on Thursday night. And then, of course, the news broke Thursday night into Friday. I still think that was a huge, huge part of the Chiefs, honestly, looking flat to start that Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how do you come out flat for the biggest game of your career? Well, they'd been the Super Bowl the year before, so it's not like it's first time they're there. They weren't too amped up. You can show, they showed emotion going through and being announced and this and that, but there wasn't a full crowd of fans. Even though that wouldn't have been probably good if it was, you know, because Tampa was hosting. Maybe then it would have been good. The Chiefs actually played better on the road than at home. We've seen that with Patrick Mahomes' teams. That actually might have benefited them if it was packed with Buccaneer fans. Who knows? Although I would argue with the tackles and then the pass rushers, it would be even harder.
Yeah.
But the point still stands that there were distractions 2 days before that, 3 days before that game, 2 days before that game, and it was all the way up. And there, Andy Reid was still being asked about it before kickoff on the pregame show. And that's no way can that be good. And the same thing I'd say about Draymond Green's suspension, where he missed game 5 in that series against the Cavs. The Warriors were cruising to where they were going to win this series. And that happened. And the Cavaliers took full advantage of game 5, built a little momentum, stole game 6. And then, of course, we know what happened game 7. Irving with the gigantic 3 against Curry in his face and on the sideline. And, of course, LeBron with the amazing block on Iguodala, which looked like it was going to be a layup, and LeBron erased it. And the rest is history. So you can't go back and you can revisit history, but you can't go back and change it. The Bulls are the only team to have, the Lakers won it all when they won 69, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The Bulls won 3 more games, won 72, and won it all. So you can certainly make a strong argument that the greatest basketball team ever was the 1995-96 Chicago Bulls, who went 72-10 and won the NBA title. And that was the first of their second three-peat. And 5 years ago today, it was the Bulls winning their 72nd game. Seems like yesterday.
Yeah.
But it isn't. It was 25 years ago.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.